there is a responsibility as a DJ, I think, to get to know the people and the culture behind the music rather than just consuming it and playing it. It makes you a better raver, dancer, music producer, and you just start to listen to the music in a different way. You start to feel it in a different way. You will connect to it in a different way.
Hey, streamers and dreamers, my name is Otto Kent, and you're listening to The Week by Telecom Electronic Beats. It's Thursday, March 28th, and this is your weekly update on music, culture, and what's next. This week, we're talking Beyoncé's new album, vocalists fighting for recognition, the Nigerian artist Wizkid, and the fuzz about James Blake and a new music platform. The new Beyoncé album, Cowboy Carter, drops tomorrow. And you might be able to tell from the title what the music is going for. After Renaissance, her 2022 album celebrated the legacy of Black American house music and club cultures, the latest from Beyoncé references and centers the Black roots of the country music genre. Typical for Beyoncé's singularity, though, she said in a statement that this ain't a country album, this is a Beyoncé album, of course. Still, the first single, Texas Hold'em, became the first song by a Black woman to hit number one on the U.S. Hot Country Songs chart. That success is apparently lifting other Black performers on the country charts, too. It's a long-overdue boost for those artists in a genre that has historically excluded them. And country is not the only genre where Black artists, women, and men have been erased from the genre's history, which brings us to this week's deep dive. Why have so many Black women been written out of dance music history? There is a new GoFundMe launched by Berlin-based DJ Sarah Farina and her collaborator Steph Clark on behalf of the vocalist Tish Bailey. It's yet another chance to talk about this ongoing issue.
Hi, I'm Tish Bailey, and I'm going to do the original song that Freak Like Me that was released by DJ Funk and DJ Dion.
Tish Bailey is a singer from Chicago. She's now 54 years old, and she uploaded this YouTube video claiming that she was the original vocalist on Freak Like Me, recorded at DJ Funk's music studio when Bailey was only 19. This story echoes a long historical pattern of Black women's artistic contributions being written out of dance music history. Whether it's Loletta Holloway's Love Sensation getting sampled and erased for Black Box for Right on Time, or CNC Music Factory putting out Everybody Dance Now without crediting Martha Wash of the Weather Girls, there are plenty of examples why people like Sarah Farina are attempting to set the record straight. Sarah, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I was saying before the mics turned on that I'm very excited to have someone in the studio that I feel like understands such a wide swath of Berlin nightlife, all the way back to some of the clubs that I first went to. And you said you were how old when you came to Berlin to start DJing?
18. I moved here only 2 weeks after my 18th birthday.
That's so rad. I mean, that mimics almost how I did it. I was like almost turned 18 and I immediately went to San Francisco and started collecting records and going out and all of those things. And so you've seen a lot happen for dance music just from your own perspective from 18 years old till now, and seen artists come and go and seen record stores come and go, seen some of the drama that maybe didn't even make it online. It was like more of an analog scene drama stuff. So how did you find your way to the YouTube video where Tish is singing Freak Like Me?
Good question. So first of all, I would say as a DJ or music lover, I think there's a responsibility to practice a form of deeper listening, right? And I always loved the song Freak Like Me by DJ Dion. I've had the privilege to play all over the world, and the song just always works like a universal song. It just brings people joy. And it's sexy and it's cool.
It is. And it has... If it fits a city context, there's something about the tonality of it that really feels like club, dirty nightclub.
Exactly, yeah. And so in 2019, I was like, I want to make music, and it's probably going to be like music that is influenced by ghetto tech and juke and footwork music. And I think there's a responsibility to not just take music from somewhere else, even though I have a proximity due to my identity, but I don't want to use that as an excuse just to take something, because I'm not from Chicago, you know. I'm just not part of the culture, really. So I wanted to work with people from there, and I was like, I want to work with a vocalist who's out there, you know. And I'm like, wait, who's the singer of Freak Like Me?
Nice.
Where's who is this? Like, it's obviously not DJ Dion.
No, it is not.
No. So I just typed in DJ Dion, freak like me, singer, vocalist. I tried all sorts of keywords. Didn't find anything. And I'm like, okay, maybe YouTube. And you know, YouTube has the endless scroll. And it took many hours, honestly, until I saw this video. I saw the thumbnail and was like, this looks interesting. And the video at the time just had a few views, not many at all. And so I click on it and then I was like, wow, that is her, 100%. So I go to her YouTube channel. There are no other videos. And luckily, there was her email address. And then I instantly sent her an email. I'm like, hey, I introduce myself. I'm a DJ producer. I love your voice. I would love to work with you. And she immediately responded. And then we had a phone call for many hours. And she told me her life story. And my first question was, how come everyone knows your voice? You've made so many people happy, but no one knows your name or your face.
Wow. Where did you get that investigative spirit to just be like, I'm going to contact this person and I'm going to have the balls to just have this conversation with them? Is that something that like you feel like you had before this, or is that something that was sparked by the curiosity over Tisha's voice?
I think kind of both. It sparked even more then when I was in the situation. But, you know, I also host DJ workshops for all kinds of people, and I always try to tell them there is a responsibility as a DJ, I think, to get to know the people and the culture behind the music rather than just consuming it and playing it. It makes you a better raver, dancer, music producer. And you just start to listen to the music in a different way. You start to feel it in a different way. You will connect to it in a different way. And yeah, that's what my invitation is to other people, to be more curious about the music that brings us so much joy every day.
I have so many things to ask you because I also love Ghetto Tech and used to actually host Dance Mania parties in San Francisco. And there was one night when it was Dion and Funk, and I opened and I watched what their show was about. And investigating that genre has been an obsession for a lot of people who are interested in dance music. That genre has made its way into so many different kinds of dance music. But I think there's also this problematic layer that I think it's been ongoing. It just has slowly, slowly found its way to Europe as the conversation around the ethics of Black music in Europe has become like much more talked about by younger people, institutionally talked about, like when it comes to Trezor and their recent exhibition and trying to explain what the connections to Detroit and Chicago were. But I'd like to hear from your perspective, like, when you found out that Tisha's music and voice was not credited and you started to unravel this story, was it shocking to you or was it par for the course?
Unfortunately, it was not that shocking, but it made me incredibly sad. You know, we know all of these stories. Even in Germany, like, we have this genre called Eurodance that used to be super big here. There are very similar stories like that. There are many, many Tish Baileys out there. And, you know, with Tish, I was just like, of course, and I liked her so much. She was so lovely during that phone call. I'm like, I want to be a friend. And I was wondering, like, I asked her, do you think, are you interested in me trying to help you? I feel like I might have the network to help you make this right in a transformative justice kind of way. Because let me quickly explain transformative justice.
Right?
Usually we know punitive justice, which means there's harm being caused by someone and you get punished. You go to court, and it's mostly about who has the better story, the better resources. Transformative justice comes from an approach that is about making it right together, almost, and trying to find a way of justice that is sustainable, where we don't reproduce the harm. And there's often not really the bad guy. It's often like a lack of care, I would say, and just like a normalization of exploitation in the music industry.
Yeah, and my understanding of it as someone who's done versions of this on my own is that there's a holistic community element to what you might get out of it and unpacking that. And now that I'm a little bit older, I look back at the younger version of me who got really excited to like help someone older out or try to like get involved in something that I felt was unjust. And I was so lucky that I had built a network of older people around me when I was doing that, because I think they helped me shape some of the things that would have been not great decisions based off of my naivete and my youth. Could you speak a little bit to the network that you have that helped you guide you in the decisions that you made? Specifically, what I'd like to understand is the road to you eventually making music with Tish and releasing it.
Yeah. So I was overwhelmed by the information and the messiness of the story. And I have this amazing friend, Steph, who I've been friends with for a long, long time. And Steph is a label manager herself, a very important figure in dance music, but more in the background. And I introduced her to the story and I'm like, hey, Steph, do you have the capacity to be my partner in this? And she said, yes. And throughout the years, because this was in 2019 and now it's 2024, like we've been working on this for a long time. I asked my friends, my mentors, I just shared the story because then it was about like, not just spreading the story, but make people more aware of how we listen to music. And first, we were mostly focused on like, okay, who are the right contexts? What is the right way to approach this? How open is the other side to make this right in a soft way, I would say. And in the meantime, she also always sent me those amazing song ideas through WhatsApp, like voice memos. And I started producing songs, and what is very important to me to talk about the working conditions, because it was clear to me if I want to work with her, I want to make sure she gets paid for it. And I'm not a wealthy person, unfortunately, but in Germany we have amazing funding institutions like Initiative Music, and I applied for that funding institution 2 years ago. And we got it, which was amazing. So I had a budget to actually pay for a studio in Chicago, pay her a good fee, and so on, and pay the team basically helping me to put this release together. And also, I want to say it was so important for us to be independent. Because we are not working with any label. In this case, I'm like, no, this is just going to be us. And with the funding, like, okay, we have budget to get someone who helps with PR, so the promos are being sent out, and that was just perfect. I'm like, yeah, maybe there's another time in the future where we make more songs and we maybe find a label, but we want to fix the Freak Like Me situation first.
Yeah, and could I ask, I think that the messaging around the new release and Trish's situation has been done in this very calculated but also sensitive way. You know, there's lots of questions that people probably want to ask about Dion and labels and misogyny, all of these things that are floating around this. I mean, for me, I can see that you're taking on someone who really wants to enter into the conversation willingly and be an example and help other people. But at the same time, the messaging is not quite like that. It's a little bit more poetic to me.
That's so nice to hear, because Steph and I put so much work into that. It's storytelling, right? And as you say, we could have easily just done like a call out and be like, fuck you, and like da 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 da. But that's not what we're interested in. Like, that's not our character. That's just not how we roll. And as you say, I think it's more sustainable that way. And we want to be, hopefully, a positive example how we can make things right. Because I think, especially since Black Lives Matter happened and all of those things, a lot of people feel like, oh, I'm afraid to make mistakes in general, like, or with many men who are being in a crisis right now, like, oh, I feel like I can't say anything anymore, whatever. I'm like, being a person, being a human is messy, right? And we're gonna fuck up things, and that's okay. So rather than trying to not make any mistake and be perfect and just learn everything about how to be a good person rationally, how can we embody that and how can we practice real accountability? Like, how can we build a culture of accountability? You know, it's so rare to meet people who can truly apologize. And I feel like one of the first steps for accountability is, do you feel the pain and harm that you have caused? Of course, this depends on the context, but I'm like, this is also almost something spiritual, right?
Absolutely.
So I just hope, I hope people can learn something from this. Like, you can be like, I didn't know better, I didn't care enough, right, and I'm sorry.
Right.
But I want to do it better now.
Right.
And we can do this together, right? And how can this other person or this other side show up so this won't happen again? This is transformative justice for me. And I feel like, I just hope that we just can learn how to speak more with each other than about each other.
Hell yeah. And one of my favorite things about researching this project is seeing Tish relate to you and your team as the angels.
Yeah, so sweet.
She commented, they're my angels. Yeah. And to me, that was like, oh, this is Tish's way of relating spiritually and like colloquially to mm-hmm. what you guys are doing. Mm-hmm. And now she can make it her own.
Yeah, and her name is finally out there. It's so heartwarming, you know? It's just like, even if we don't get any further for some reason, like, this has done so much positive already. And like, I would even like, invite people, if you have the song, if you're a DJ and you play the song, just rewrite the name of the song. Type in DJ Dion featuring Tish Bailey.
Hell yeah.
What
I
about
love
that?
That.
You know, I think that could be the first
or
step.
Or write it on your... Take a Sharpie out.
Yeah, or with your track list, like if you played a song mm-hmm. or whatever. And what's also really important to me to say is that I have to hold myself accountable as well if you want to support someone, because I don't want to be a savior or something, right? So I want to point out this was and is very consensual with Tish. And I feel like there are other examples of people trying to help other people out and it goes really wrong because they start to center themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And want to feel good, like, oh, I'm doing something. And I think that is very important. And I've learned a lot about myself as well. And I also want to, like, as a music producer, point out, like, this has happened to me before, too. Like, I'm in the flow of making a song. And I have thousands of samples on my laptop. And I just drag and drop some sample into the session. The song is done, pre-mastered. I send it to the label. I get the master back. And I'm like, wait. What is the sample? Like, wait, I think it's not royalty free. This has happened to me before. So I want to say, you know, and that's what I mean about like, it's not the bad guy or whatever.
No.
We can all be problematic. It doesn't matter your intention, right? If I would step on your foot and it's not my intention, it would still hurt you. So same thing. And
comes down to synthesizers too. Like you can be jamming and come up with a lead line. And then a year later when it's out, someone's like, I already own that line.
Yeah.
And it's very famous. And you're like, oops.
Yeah. And I think that's something, I just wanted to share because I'm also not perfect. I'm not here to be like point fingers and like, this is how the only way to do it. I'm ready to have a dialogue. I want to talk about the working conditions. I want to talk about class. It's someone not having the resources. It's also people just being shitty or not caring enough. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's the messiness of being human. And if we take it further regarding sampling, like I could also just, make a baile funk track, for example. But mm-hmm. I don't have any relation to Brazil. I know I'm a black, brown person and so on. But like, I think it would still be weird for me to make that music and use some vocal sample from there. And I don't even speak the language. But I think in terms of identity politics, there's like a downside to it where I'm like, let's say I make a track, use some Portuguese baile funk sample, I release it, no one would say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the sample is not clear or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of my proximity, my identity proximity to the culture.
Mm.
But I don't want to escape the accountability just because of my identity. And I think this goes out to everyone. It's not just the white guys. It's, you know, just being conscious and a caring person, essentially, I think.
Yeah, it's what I love about the way that you've presented this project, that it opens up all of these conversations. Not everyone's going to have every single one of them, but it is presented in a way where everyone's going to question something either about themselves or about their musical ecosystem, because you've got this historical context and then you've got brand new music. So if someone's just listening to the new song, which is banging, by the way,
thank you.
If they listen to the new song and they have an opinion about it, or they have an opinion about the way that you use Tish's vocals, then all of that is like context for all of the discussions that you and your partners are trying to get people to have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's awesome. I think it's great. I wanted to read this quote from your GoFundMe because at the end of the day, we are here to talk about raising some money as well.
Yes.
Restorative justice on the money side too. In your GoFundMe, it's, we need to relearn music history and make space for people, names, and stories to live on through their work to prevent the cycle which repeats and excludes artists over and over again. So let's talk about calls for action. What mm-hmm. what do you and Tish want from people in terms of action?
So me, my friend Steph, we put together this resource, this Google Doc that is on the bottom of the website. It's a long list of videos, long videos, short videos, articles, some even in German, for people to dive into this topic. And I think, I mean, people can consume music, that's fine. Again, it's just an invitation to get to know the history behind it, you know? And since I've been in this situation with Tish, it really changed my listening behavior. I've listened to so many tracks where I'm like, whose voice is that? What is going on? Like, I'm sure this is probably another Tish Bailey case.
Right.
And it scares me how normalized it is. And I just, yeah, it's, and you know what also makes me sad? Like, there's so many cases like that, and the people are getting older, and also time is running. And when those people pass, their stories die with them. And I think that's so tragic. And yeah, essentially, I just hope, yeah, for more care in all kinds of contexts and forms.
So we definitely want to get Tish's opinion in on this. So I asked Tish herself, and I asked her, what ultimately did she want from people when they hear the new music or donate to the GoFundMe? And this is what she had to say.
When people hear this new EP, the first thing I want them to think is, wow, Sarah made these tracks. She did that. These are hot. These are fire. In regards to what I want people to feel about me personally, one, I want them to know, okay, this is the girl who sings Freak Like Me. She still makes music. She's still a creator. She can do something that's inspiring and to go from 0 to 100 and do something that's just fun. You know, so we got Stay in Your Lane, which is more along the Freak Like Me vibe. They say, let's have a little fun. And then you've got Stay Soft that says, it doesn't matter. You're not too old. You're not too different. Whatever your situation is right now, you don't have to deal with that. Manifest a different reality for yourself. So the music is, I just want people to feel what they feel when they hear that music. And I hope that what I was feeling when I made it is what they feel when they hear it. In regards to GoFundMe, whether it was $1 or $100, those dollars, they all speak words. They say, hey, Tish, I hear you. Tish, I see you. Tish, I support you. There is nothing I could say that actually makes you know how validated I feel when, you know, I get that message and GoFundMe says, hey, somebody made this donation, and I just want to contact them all one at a time and say, hey, I appreciate this. You don't know what this means to me. And that's pretty much the thing. I want people to love my music, and I want people to know how much I appreciate what they do. And it's so much more than a donation. It's validation. And it's just amazing. It means the world to me.
Thank you so much for taking time today to really bare your soul on what seems like it was not only a personal project, but quite a lot of work.
Oh my God. So much work. A lot of times this was not fun. And I think it will take a long time. This will be a long process, but I hope, that we can finally have Tish's name out there in all of the online music stores, DJ Dion featuring Tish Bailey, and that she gets the future royalties. We're not even asking for the past royalties because that's way too complicated. We're not interested in that. We are interested in the future and making things better now.
Well, I don't buy a lot of tracks these days, but as soon as her name is on that, I will be purchasing it.
Thank you.
Maybe even get the vinyl.
Yeah.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us, Sarah. Now let's get into some more news that mattered this week. Wizkid is done with his new album and says he does not want to be called an Afrobeats artist. Wizkid is one of Africa's most successful artists of the last decade. He announced on Instagram that his next album is already done and said that he does not want his songs to be labeled just Afrobeats. He says, and I quote, "That's like saying every American artist makes rap. That's stupid. That is why no matter how good or amazing the music we make, be it R&B or whatever other genre, we all get nominated in one Africa category or the other. The Afrobeats was made by y'all to put all we make into one box." Wizkid is not alone with this complaint. Burna Boy said something similar last year, and it rings true. The music biz creates genre tags for the purpose of selling music more than any musical precision. And it's a long problem with music from outside the US that it all gets lumped together under terms that erase their unique identities. YouTube users can soon search for songs by humming. Did you recognize that? If yes, in the next few weeks, YouTube might too. And if not, this news is especially interesting for you, since last year, YouTube users on Android phones have been able to search for a song by humming. Now, an eagle-eyed user on Reddit found the feature enabled in the YouTube Music app for iOS and suggested that a wider rollout is still to come and that this feature might even challenge Shazam in the track ID rat race. YouTube won't be the first to do this. Google Search was ahead of the game with the feature in 2020. The identification of Music Group and all other dance floor train spotters must be very excited, and we're very curious to test this out more, since you guys love my humming. James Blake's Vault.fm service launches to acclaim and suspicion. A couple weeks ago, electronic artist James Blake went viral with what's become a common complaint. Musicians should be able to make money from their recorded music. We've already talked about the relationship audiences have to this ongoing complaint over and over regarding artists and how they earn money from recorded music, and James Blake quickly stumbled upon one kind of solution in the short weeks since. He announced that he'd be putting out unreleased music on a platform called Vault.fm, a subscription-based streaming service that feels similar on its surface to Patreon or OnlyFans. But there's a lot of questions here. First of all, how was Vault able to launch so quickly? Did they pay Blake to get on the platform, gave him equity to promote it? Someone on TikTok is even alleging that Vault.fm stole the idea from an existing music company called Vault.fan. I'll drop that link in the show notes. But to sum this up, in my opinion, there's a lot of easy ways to dunk on James Blake here, and the internet has done plenty of that. But in the end, it's at least one step towards recognizing and changing the broken streaming model on a more mainstream scale. So that's all for the week this week. Thank you for locking in. Next week, Kikaloma will be back with a very special episode. Kalayla will join her for an extensive conversation about her Raven era, the importance of being offline, and about building communities. Make sure not to miss that. As a personal super fan of Kalayla, I won't be either. Probably one of the best concerts I've been to ever. The Week is a production by Telecom Electronic Beats and ACB Stories.